Why, I always did like a man in a uniform. And that one fits you grand. Why don't you come up sometime and see me? I'm home every evening.
Yeah, but I'm busy every evening.
Busy? So what are you trying to do, insult me?
Why, no, not at all. I'm just busy, that's all. You see, we're holding meetings in Jacobson's Hall every evening. Anytime you have a moment to spare, I'll be glad to have you drop in. You're more than welcome.
I heard you. But you ain't kidding me any. You know, I met your kind before. Why don't you come up sometime, huh?
Well, I...
Don't be afraid. I won't tell.
But,
Come up. I'll tell your fortune. Ah, you can be had.
Well, there you go, Craig. A little bit of...
Cary Grant there,
Cary
too,
Grant,
right?
And Mae West, one of the stars, two stars from the film She Done Him Wrong, which was shown this past weekend. We're joined by John Ewing from the Cleveland Cinematheque over the Cleveland Institute of Art, where they show all sorts of different foreign films, different types of series. Last time I think we talked with John, it was about the Buster Keaton films that they were doing, but this one's provocatively pre-code. Now, John, I guess you did this once before. Right?
Yeah, we did a pre-code series in, 2001, I believe. So it's been a number of years.
Let's talk about that, the provocatively pre-code. So the code, I guess they're referring to, was what was known as the Hays Code. Was that the gentleman behind it? Or?
That's right. Yeah, he was the one who originated it, although it really wasn't enforced until 1934 under a guy named Joseph Breen. So the Hays Code became was the Motion Picture Production Code, and you used to see, and maybe you still do, I don't know, a little kind of MPAA seal, you know, in the ads of movies if it was approved by the production code.
Well, talk about, I guess, that time. What was the need for this code? What was going on that this sort of shifted in what was being, I guess, produced by Hollywood or the motion picture industry?
Well, there were some famous scandals in the 20s back in the silent era, one involving the comedian Fatty Arbuckle. But there was this general perception that the movies were decadent and were corrupting the morals of not only American youth but of America in general. And this of course was a tough time throughout the country because 29 was the start of the Great Depression. So Hollywood was in a bit of a quandary because they wanted to kind of do the right thing as far as the moral police were concerned, but they also wanted to make money. And as we all know, sex and sleaziness sells. So if they could push the envelope, they knew they could get people in the seats, and that's what they did until around 1934 when. When things kind of clamped down.
John, you talked about the perception. Was it reality, though, or was it a very small percentage of films that gave this off?
Well, there were a lot of films made in the years that the code was in place, but not really enforced. And to be honest, I haven't surveyed all of them, but it's a pretty. You certainly do see it in a lot of the films from that era, and certainly in the ones that survive and are remembered today. I mean, one of the, like all the early gangster films from the 30s, Scarface and Little Caesar and so forth, those were also pre-code movies. I don't know that we're not really showing one of the most famous ones, in this series, but those films were quite violent. And when the code was enforced, they not only cut out the violence, but they said that you really couldn't present like a bad guy in a sympathetic light, which is kind of what you saw in those gangster films.
We're talking today with John Ewing from the Cleveland Cinematheque over at the Cleveland Institute of Art, where they are now involved in the provocatively pre-code series. We played a little bit of She Done Him Wrong, which had Mae West, Cary Grant, so some big stars. Is there other films that you're showing that maybe don't have big stars but still have a quality story to them? Or what made you select the ones that you're showing for this series?
Well, I did a lot of research. I didn't want to repeat anything that we did in our first pre-code series, even though it had been you know, 13, 14 years. And that series included things like King Kong, which was a pre-code film and was cut. I'm sure a lot of your listeners know. And Freaks, which was kind of a notorious Todd Browning film. So we have films. I mean, some of the films in our series, you mentioned stars. You're going to see people like, you know, like Frederick March and, well, you mentioned Cary Grant, Clark Gable, Gene Harlow. But there are a couple of movies coming on, I think it's February the 5th. Yes. And these are, I'm sorry, February the 7th. These are two prints from the Library of Congress. One is a movie called Safe in Hell by William Wellman. It stars a woman named Dorothy McKell, who I don't know, but it sounds very interesting, about a woman who thinks she's killed a guy and flees to this island that's just kind of teeming with kind of lustful, you know, sordid men who are very interested in her presence. And then Diplomaniacs is a comedy kind of in the Duck Soup or Million-Dollar Legs mode. It's it stars Wheeler and Woolsey, which was a very popular comedy duo at the time. But it's a spoof of, like government and international relations and so forth.
Were there anybody whose career kind of didn't transfer once maybe a lot of this stuff was changed, or did that not really affect any of the people in the industry?
Well, there were people who... whose careers kind of ended at the end of the silent era. But I'm sure there are people, I don't know if I can name somebody off the top of my head, but all of these people were, these were all sound films now. And so if the actor made the transition to sound, I think they were probably, good to go. I don't think there was anybody who was drummed out of the industry for making, salacious films. In fact, some people, like Joan Crawford, was in some of these, and Barbara Stanwyck, who became a huge star. So it might have helped their careers in some respects.
Even somebody like a fairly young Cary Grant, do you think it helped his career?
I think it probably did. I mean, he's a pretty minor character in that film, and I guess he... I don't know if he was happy with his part, but he does acknowledge a great debt to Mae West, who kind of guided him because he was quite young, at that point in his career.
Now, I know in the previous, when you had the She Done Him Wrong film that was shown over the weekend, you did have a professor from Oberlin College come by, at least that's scheduled for doing that.
Right.
Do you include a lot of that with some of this to get sort of a historical or a educational information about these films?
That's the only guest we had lined up, going into the series. It was kind of a special, kickoff program. But boy, people can find plenty of stuff online. There are a number of books about the pre-code era. And these films are really quite popular. I mean, what people should know is that, and as a professor pointed out, last week, what they're going to see in these films is like probably nothing that you couldn't see on broadcast TV these days. But but back then it was, and certainly in relation to the movies, the Hollywood movies that started in 1934 from the 30s, 40s, and 50s. It is surprisingly risque.
Well, it sort of enlightens a lot of people who you grow up watching black and white movies on TV and you think there's a certain temperament to them, not real.
Right.
And then you get movies that come out in the 60s and you sort of see this whole different kind of attitude in the movies that are made in the 60s. And then you think, oh, this is sort of brand new, but not realizing that, even similar things like that were going on way before.
Right. And the production code that we're talking about here lasted until the 60s, the late 60s, when they instituted the rating system, which was another way of the industry trying to ward off, government censorship by creating their own, censorship board, within the industry, which could approve scripts and the final versions of films and so forth.
Now, I see the last one that you have in this coming up at the end of February, beginning of March, Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde.
Right.
Which version of this is the one we're talking about?
This is the 31 version with Frederick March. it's, I mean, this is not only like a terrific, you know, horror film or just, or psychological drama, but it's a great piece of cinema. It's beautifully shot by Carl Struss, who is, excuse me, not only a great cinematographer, but a famous photographer of the era. Frederick March's, you know, transformation scenes are legendary, and it wasn't really known for many years how it was accomplished. And it's considered the best of the Jekyll and Hyde films.
It's one of those movies that people who are horror film fans should definitely make an interest to go and see. This, again, is the Provocatively Pre-Code series that you have going on. What else is happening there at the Cinematheque that you're showing for the people in the next couple of weeks or so?
Oh, boy. I mean, we do, in addition to a thematic series, which is what the Pre-Code series is, you know, we're always running first-run films, which don't play anyplace else in Cleveland. This weekend, we're showing a program of, award-winning short films from the 2014 Sundance Film Festival. The 2015 festival is just going to be starting in a week or so. We did this program last year, and actually one of the shorts that we showed in the 2013 program was the short Whiplash, which has become now this acclaimed and, you know, as of tomorrow, Oscar-nominated, you know, feature film. But you could have seen the short that became the feature last year in this program. And J.K. Simmons, who I think will win the Oscar this year for supporting actor, was also in that short. In addition to that, we have, we've got a film called Keep on Keepin' On, which is a jazz documentary about Clark Terry. That could be nominated for an Oscar come tomorrow. We always have, you know, revivals of other older films. We're showing a movie about William S. Burroughs, the writer of Naked Lunch, a film from 1983 that was presumed lost but was recently found and restored. And we have the great documentary filmmaker Frederick Wiseman, who's been around for like 45 years, coming in person on Sunday, January the 25th. So there's really a lot. I mean, people really need to go online to see everything we're doing, because
sure,
we do about five, sometimes six different films every weekend, every Thursday through Sunday.
And now, are you getting prints coming in, or are you up to this whole digital downloading kind of a way of displaying your movies there?
What's we're still showing 35 in many cases. We're getting a new auditorium in October, and we will have true digital cinema projectors at that point. We are showing some films from Blu-ray, which is an HD format, and we have a great HD projector, and the images fill our screen, and they're really quite bright and beautiful. I really think that most people seeing a movie here couldn't tell the difference between what they're seeing here and what they're seeing at a commercial theater. I mean, as far as digital projection goes. But no, we are still showing 35mm films. We're one of the last places in the region to be doing that, and all of the pre-code movies are being shown from film, so that kind of adds a little more luster to them, I think.
Now, these, as you say in this thing, it says they haven't been shown before or aren't, or maybe with you or other places like this. Are these things that people are rediscovering? Or
yes, when we said we haven't shown these at the Cinematheque, they have played in other places. There's a really great repertory theater in New York City called Film Forum, and I'd say for the past, 20 years or so, Bruce Goldstein, the programmer there, has really championed pre-code films, and he seems to do a pre-code series, I would say, once a year. So they do get played around. I know Turner Classic Movies has even done, like a pre-code weekend or, series. So they, they're popular, that's for sure. And as I said, a lot of the people, your listeners, I'm sure, have seen pre-code movies without really even being aware of it. Duck Soup is technically a pre-code movie. Footlight Parade, which we're showing in our series, and all those early Busby Berkeley films like 42nd Street, those are pre-code movies. And if you look at those dance numbers, I mean, they really are fairly suggestive. And I know my assistant's uncle or great-uncle or grandfather, somebody, was talking about how he had seen Footlight Parade when he was a kid like three or four times because he said it was so dirty. So anyway.
A lasting impression on a youth, that's for sure.
That's right.
These are the movies that are being shown along with others at the Cleveland Cinema at the Cinematheque, Cleveland Institute of Art. If people want to get all the details you mentioned going online.
Yes, if they go to www.cia.edu, they'll find a Cinematheque link. CIA in this case stands for Cleveland Institute of Art. And, you know, and we also, the other thing people should know is that we're leaving our longtime home of 29 years, you know, this summer when we move to a new auditorium up on Euclid. So if people want to see the Cinematheque, the old Cinematheque, the one that really kind of established our reputation, they have about, six and a half more months to do so. Yeah. And it's a beautiful space. It's a beautiful old retro space that seats 600 people. So that, to me, that in itself is worth not only the visit, but the price of admission.
It's our guest today, John Ewing. Thanks for sharing the time and showing the movies. Appreciate that.
Okay, thanks very much.
Thanks.